Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, where we've generally been having Parsha classes, so we're like holding as we go from Parsha to Parsha, week to week in terms of the context of what's going on, we've been taking a break from that as we've been studying different topics. So just to get a little bit filled in Parshas Chukah, so last week, of course, we had the rebellion of Korach against the authority of Moshe. Preceding that, the Torah recorded the episode of the spies. That was the main incident which had taken place before that. This week's question has a series of different events, and we are going to focus on a three-verse episode in the beginning of chapter 21. It's on page 848. We'll start there, then we'll do the background afterwards. So, new chapter, new paragraph, break. We will study this particular little episode that takes place. Now, the Jewish people are nearing their entry into the land of Israel. It's been some 38, 39 years of wandering around. The Torah fast forwards through most of those years. Most of them are uneventful and do not have many events recorded. And now we have a number of events are recorded towards the end of that journey before they make their way into the land. And here's one of those stories that we have. Right before this is the death of Aharon, which we will take a look at a little bit more in depth in a few moments. Preceding that, just to give a little bit of context, right before this episode is the death of Aharon. Immediately preceding that in this parsha is the story of the rock, where the Jewish people do not have any water. Miriam has died. Miriam, in her merit, the well of water which followed the Jewish people, therefore ends. They no longer have that source of water. The people complain for water. Hashem tells Moshe to speak to the rock. Moshe strikes the rock. Water provides water. The rock provides water. And Moshe and Aharon are both punished for their roles without being able to go into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And prior to that, we have the story of the red cow. That's what the parsha opens with, the way to purify oneself. So in that context, we have the following three verses. Let's begin Pasuk Aleph. Vayishma ha-Kana'ani melech Arad yoshev ha-Negev. I'm sorry, I'm on page 848, 849. Vayishma ha-Kana'ani melech Arad yoshev ha-Negev. The Canaanite king of Arad, who dwelled in the south, heard that Israel had come, Kivo Yisrael Derech HaAsarim, had come by the route of the spies. Derech HaAsarim is the Hebrew, which Rashi translated as is here translated into our art scroll as by the route of the spies. Vayilochem beYisrael, and he warred against the Jewish people. Vayeshp mimenu shevi, and he took a captive from it. I'm going to read all three verses, then we're going to go through our regular routine of asking for questions and comments on these verses. That's verse 1. Kanani, king of Arad, heard the Jewish people were coming by the way of the spies, and he fought with them, and he took a captive. Vayida Yisrael neder l'Hashem vayomar. And the Jewish people made a vow to Hashem and said, Im nasoin titein es ha'om hazeh biyodi, if you will give this nation into my hand, you will deliver these people into my hand, V'hacharamti es oreihem, then I will consecrate their cities. V'yishma Hashem v'kol Yisrael, Hashem heard the voice of Yisrael. V'yitein es ha-Kanani, and he gave the Canaanite into their hands. V'yachareim eshem v'yes oreihem, and the Jewish people consecrated them and their cities. V'yikro Hashem ha-makom charma. Those are three verses. Let's go through, let's break these down. This is an odd, interesting little episode, anecdote that's told to us here in the middle of this journey through the desert. Let's start from the beginning. Verse 1, comments, questions on this verse.
What is that? Yeah.
Thank you. I was going to say, the person listening to this on tape is going to think I'm speaking to myself here. Yeah, so what's the question?
The captive.
What about the captive?
He took one captive.
Okay, the language seems to imply that yes, they took one captive. Good. Good comment. Yeah, what else?
By the root of the spies.
Yeah, what about it?
Well, I don't know that the spies had a root, really.
Okay, so let's
face someone, another face.
Okay, so or we could simply, if we wanted to phrase it as almost a question or just as a comment, what's the significance of that? There seems to be some pointing out that this king of Arad heard that the Jews were coming. How are they coming? We somehow tie it into the root of the spies. Whether or not the spies had a specific root, I mean they're spies, right? So they certainly didn't broadcast to anybody exactly which way they were going. But we have some indication or a stress of this concept of by the root of the spies. Good. What else? Okay, you're missing the most obvious question, which often happens because you're looking for the details and you're forgetting the starting place.
The Canaanite king of Arad, who dwelled in the south.
Look, if you were reading this for the very first time, if you were writing a newspaper article about this battle, mm-hmm. if I told you country A attacked country B, what would be the first question you would ask?
Why?
Thank you. Why? Countries don't go to war for nothing. Countries go to war for something. Be it honor, prestige, glory, wealth, power, land, you name it, they'll do it. But you at least have to ask, why? So here we have a verse that the Canaanite king of Arad, who dwelled in the south, heard that Israel had come by the root of the spies, and he warred against Israel. So we would ask a very simple question. Why? We would actually add to that question of why. Because if you recall from the splitting of the sea back in Sefer Shmos, in chapter 15, as we read every day in our davening in Shema, where we repeat the Oz Yashir, one of the things that we say there, if you want to flip back, you can just take a look at it inside, you can listen to me either way, but in verse 14 on page 378, if you will flip back, Shomu Amim Yirgozu, and starting in verse 14, the people heard, they were agitated. Chil Ochaz Yoshve Peloshes. The dwellers of Philistia were gripped with terror. Oz Nifhalu Alufei Edom, the chieftains of Edom were confounded. Ele Moav Yechozemu Ra'od, trembling, gripped the powers of Moav. Namogu Kol Yoshve Kenaan. All of the dwellers of Canaan dissolved. As Yosher describes a attitude of the nations of the world of fear, of terror, when Yehoshua sends spies, the two spies, into the land of Israel, the first city that they're about to take, the city of Jericho, thank you. So the woman with whom they stay gives them an accounting of, we have heard about your people. We are terrified about what they are going to do. How Hashem is going to hand over our lands to you. So above and beyond the simple question of, well, if nation A attacks nation B, why? What's going on here that this seems to be breaking a pattern of the Torah testifying, the nations of the land testifying, there was a palpable fear of this nation coming out of Egypt, now 38 years through the desert, about to enter into the land that Hashem had promised them. And this nation, without being told very much, this king of Arad does not seem to share that, and without being told why, goes out in wars with the Jewish people. Okay, any other questions, comments on this verse? Yeah.
So, was this taking place outside of Eretz Israel?
Excellent, good question. Where is this war taking place? Beautiful. What does it sound like?
Outside.
Good. Where are we? Which one of the five books are we reading right now?
Bamidbar.
Book number 4. Have the Jews entered into the land of Israel? No. Is Moshe still leading them? Yes. Is Moshe going to enter into the land of Israel? No. We know they're not in the land of Israel. What nation is attacking them?
Canaanites.
Yeah. That's a funny thing. Mm-hmm. The Canaanite king of Arad, who dwelled in the south, heard and attacked them? So this seems to be an offensive war. The Jews are on this root of the spies. So where are they? They're on the root of the spies, but they're clearly not in the land of Israel, and they're being attacked by a Canaanite king of Arad who dwelled in the south. The south of what? South of Israel? South of the land of south of the land of Israel? Where is this war taking place? Now we'll keep that question in mind, because if you say that they're being attacked out in the desert, when we see let's go through now the next two verses. What's the Jews' response to being attacked? Let's take a look at this now. Right, so I think that those are excellent points on this first verse. So we have the king of Arad attacks. We have this root of the spies that's clearly going to play some role. Why are we being told so much about the fact that he heard they were on the root of the spies? He attacks and he takes what seems like a single captive. Israel made a vow to Hashem. The Jewish response is they take a neder, they take a vow, and they say, if you will deliver this people into my hand, I will consecrate their cities. Now, let's take Jack's comment for a second. Where is this war taking place? Is this an offensive a battle that the Jews are fighting on Canaanite land in their cities?
No.
Or are they being attacked in their camps in the desert?
In the desert.
Right? Yeah. And what's their vow?
Take the Canaanite city and consecrate
it. What Canaanite city? I mean, where's this war been? If you're about to take a city and you say, if you give me this city into my hands, I will consecrate it to you. That makes a lot of sense. But they're not fighting in that city. Where are they fighting?
In the desert.
In the middle of the desert. Yet they say that what's their neder, what's their vow that they take? If you give me this nation into our hands, we will consecrate their cities. Shem hears their voice. Right, interesting parallel. The Canaanite king of Arad heard that the Jews had come by the way of the root. And now the two verses later we have, and Hashem heard the voice of Israel. Now again, what was their voice? Their voice was their vow that they said, if you will deliver these people into our hands. And he delivered the Canaanite into their hands, and it, meaning the Jewish people, consecrated them and their cities. It named the place Charma. Where are the cities being consecrated?
In Israel.
Right, there are no cities in the desert. These people live somewhere else. They're coming to attack them. They win, and they consecrate those cities. Seems like a long-distance consecration.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, questions? I mean, these are just the questions I'm asking, right? So far, so good? The big overarching question that we could ask would be like, why are we being told this whole thing anyway? Like, what is it? This is like sort of stripped in here, these three verses. After this, the Torah completely goes on to something unrelated. We just, you know, move on to the next journey. Before this, where does this little three-verse anecdote fit in terms of the big picture, in terms of what's going on?
Can't we assume that this the battle took place in Negev?
So the only thing that we know is that the Jews have not yet entered into the land of Israel. We're still in the end of the book number 4. Moshe is still their leader. We know that he doesn't enter into the land of Israel.
It must be in South Jordan.
Right, so it's got to be in an area that does not count as Israel. However we'll draw the borders, where they are now is not in Israel proper.
Yeah.
But we're calling this the Canaanite nation, the king of Arad.
So it's either the Sinai or Noah on the other side.
Somewhere around there, that's correct. That's correct. Okay, shall we go? Let's see what we come up with. Let's take a look at it. There are going to be two approaches. There's going to be a sort of the pshat, and there's going to be the drash. There's going to be the simple explanation of the text, which we'll see, and then there's going to be a lot of the midrashim. We're going to give us some added flavoring to this particular story. Let's start with the pshat. The Ramban has a very lengthy discussion here, which is complex just because of the geography that he discusses, in which he proves that this particular nation actually was a nation that lived in the land of Israel, as the Torah calls them, a Kanaani nation, a Canaanite nation. The Canaanites lived in the land proper, and they had come out to attack the Jewish people in the desert. And we're going to get back to it as we go a little bit more into this, why that is. But just as far as understanding who these people are, they were a Canaanite nation that came out to attack the Jews that lived in the land of Canaan. The Jewish people respond and say, if you hand these people over to us now, we will consecrate their cities in the future when we conquer them. That's how the Ramban learns the simple meaning of the text. We're going to see in Rashi the Midrashim. But on the simple level of the story, what's going on here is that a people from within the land of Israel attack the Jews outside the land of Israel. The Jewish people make a vow and say, if you hand these people over to us now, we will consecrate their cities. Why are they talking about their cities if they're being attacked in the desert? Because, says the Ramban, the people who are attacking them actually live in the cities that we are about to enter into. And if you hand these people over to us now, here in the desert, when we get back in, we will consecrate those cities too. We will not take any of the booty, any of the spoils for ourselves. We will give them all to you and to your service. And then the Ramban learns on a simple level as to what's taking place, and we will get back to this. Rashi is going to quote from the Midrashim, another understanding. Let's start with Rashi. Rashi says, if you want to follow it inside, I am in the first column. First column, about six lines up from the bottom. Vayishma HaKanani, right up the little aleph, which is the last letter on the line above that. Vayishma HaKanani. What did they hear? Let's start with that question. What did these people hear? What did they hear? That would you answer that question. If I ask, what did they hear that they attacked?
It was a rumor.
What did they hear?
That the spies had known.
Okay, so you're all picking up on some good things here. The simple meaning of the puzzle is very difficult. He heard that Israel had come by the route of the spies. That's the best idea, that they heard that they were traveling. So Chazal see in similar things in the beginning of Parshas Yisro. In Sefer Shmos, we have a very similar comment by the sages. Pasuk there says, Vayishma, I'm on page 394 if you want to look at it inside. Vayishma Yisro Kohen Midyones Kol Asher Aso Elokim L'Moshe L'Yisro. Yisro heard all the things that Hashem had done. Kiyotzi Hashem Es Yisro Mimashem, that Hashem had taken them out. And he took his daughters and he came to join the Jewish people. And the sages asked, Rashi quotes, Ma Shmu Ashama Uva. What did he hear that he came? And they give a series of three answers which Rashi quotes. He heard about the giving of the Torah. He heard about the splitting of the sea. He heard about the war with Amalek. What exactly did Yisro hear that inspired him to come? And if you ask on Rashi, I don't understand why the sage is giving all these answers about the splitting of the sea or the giving of the Torah or the war with Amalek. The Pasuk says, Yisro heard all that Hashem had done, that he took him out from Mitzrayim, and therefore he came. Why are they asking the question, what did he hear? So there's an extra phrase that Rashi adds. Ma shmu ashama, what did he hear? Uva, that inspired him to come. Mm-hmm. We hear lots of things, lots of elements of a story. But what actually got him to go? So the sages say, So was it through the war with Amalek? Was it through the splitting of the sea? Was it through the giving of the Torah? Everybody heard that Hashem had taken him out of Mitzrayim. What the Torah says that he heard that it was everybody heard that. Yeshua wasn't the only one who heard that Hashem had taken the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. But what did he hear about that episode that actually inspired him to do something? That inspired him to get up, leave his place, and make a move. The sages say, which aspect of the fact that they left in time? Was it with the war when they left? Was it the splitting of the sea? Was it the giving of the Torah? What inspired him to actually change something? So the sages make a very similar comment here. The king of Arad heard the Jewish people, so they were traveling through the way of the spies. So what? What inspired them to attack? The Oz Yashir tells us, the spies of Yehoshua tells us the people were trembling. The people were afraid of the Jewish people. What is it that they suddenly heard that now they were ready to attack? They were by the root of the spies. What did they hear? Says Rashi, back in our story in 848, says Rashi, Shoma Shemes Aharon. They heard that Aharon had died. The very previous story, which we did not look at this morning, right before this, it's the death of Aharon, which begins on the previous page, on page 22. We're not going to go through the whole thing over here. But as a response to the story with the rock and the hitting of the rock in the water, both Moshe and Aharon were told they're not going to enter into the land of Israel. And Aharon dies in the previous paragraph. So it describes the procedure in which Aharon and Moshe and his son Elazar went up to the mountain of Har Hahar. That's where he was going to die. And he entered into a cave, and he lays down on the bed, and Moshe says, fold up your arms, and he does, and he says, close your eyes, and he does. And he, before that, he had given over his clothing, the clothing of the high priest, to his son Elazar. He was going to take over, and he died. He expired with a kiss of God, so to speak, as the Torah describes. So, says Rashi, say the sages, what did the king of Arad hear that inspired him to attack? He heard the very previous story, which the Torah, that's why the Torah puts them together. He heard that Aharon had died. So what? Why would the death of Aharon inspire him to attack? Says Rashi, v'nistalku anonei hakavod. The clouds of glory which accompanied the Jewish people everywhere they went was a testimony to the greatness and the merit of Aharon. And in Aharon's death, the clouds of glory left. And when the king of Canaan, from the distance, from his homeland in Canaan, saw that this nation traveling through the desert with this miraculous cloud of glory that traveled with him, and the cloud suddenly dispersed and it wasn't there, understood that to be a sign of vulnerability. That now is the time, now I'm able to attack. The Amalek may olam ritzuos mardos li Yisrael, and the nation of Amalek is always ready, always prepared to attack the Jewish people. Mezuman b'chol eis lepuranos, ready to attack and then cause us trouble. So upon the death of Aharon, the protection of Aharon, the sign that the clouds of glory were no longer there, they were ready to jump. So you say, why does Rashi mention Amalek? I thought we were talking about the king of Arad from Canaan. Why are we discussing Amalek? So the very next Rashi says, not like the Midrashic, not like the Ramban says that it was a nation living in Eretz Yisrael that heard, says Rashi, quoting from the sages, Yoshev HaNegev, that dwell in the south. Who is it that dwells in the south? That is the people of Amalek. That's the nation of Amalek. Ze Amalek Shenemar Amalek Yoshev Eretz HaNegev, Rashi says, Vishina es Leshona Ledavir Belashon Canaan. Why are they described as a Canaanite people? Because they changed their language to speak like the Canaanim. So when they attacked, they spoke a language of Canaan. Why? Say the sages a fascinating thing. That the way that the Jewish people would pray would be that they should pray, hand over these Canaanite people into our hands. But they wouldn't be Canaan, they would be Amalekim. Ra'u Yisrael levushayhem kilevushay Amalekim. The Jewish people, in the middle of their battle, were confused. They noted that the armor, the uniform of this nation, seemed to be that of Amalek. Ulishonim lashon Canaan. But their language was that the language of Canaan. And therefore, Omru nispalil stam. They said, we're going to daven just plain. We're going to daven vanilla flavor. Shenemarim nason titenes ha'om hazet biyodi. And that's why if you look in verse 2, it says, if you will deliver this people into our hands. Fascinating statement from the sages here. That the nation that attacked was really Yoshev Benegev. They dwelled in the south. That's Amaleki. They're called Canaanites. Say the sages, because they tried to disguise themselves as Canaanim. Why? In order to throw off the Jewish people, to make them think that they were Canaanim, so that when they would daven on behalf specifically of Canaanim. Jewish people, all confused by the appearance of the uniforms and the language they heard, said it stam. They just basically said, hand over these people to us, and that's what happened. Very interesting. One of the things that comes out of such a statement from the sages is an idea which is brought out very often in Svarim, in books which describe the concept of tefillah, the concept of our prayer, that we often think that we know what's best for us, and we daven for something specific. But the reality is that we really have no idea that which is best for us. And the best thing is not necessarily to daven for something specific, because if you daven for something specific, you might get that specific thing, which is really not in your best interest. Person thinks they want to buy a particular home, and in their mind, that's the home that we need to buy. And if their davening is, I need this home, this is the home that I need. So you know what? You might get that home, but really it wasn't in your best interest, because that home's going to have all sorts of trouble, all sorts of problems, and it's in the wrong neighborhood for you or for your kids or for whatever. and it was supposed to fall through, and you really need it to end up 2 months from now, you think it's terrible, 2 more months paying rent, but you really, you need it to end up there. But if you're so specific in what you're requesting, so the sages have a concept of b'derech she'adam roitza leilech, but what the path that a person desires to travel upon, malicha, we'll let them go down that path. If you really want it, I'll give it to you. So we don't daven for too specific a thing. We generally daven for that which is best, that which should work out, that which would be good for me. It's a much more vanilla flavor in this sense. What the Jewish people say, hand over this nation. I know that I can't lose this battle, but I don't know who these people are. So instead of saying, it's as if the sages are saying a Malek, part of a Malek, is getting us to daven for the wrong thing. Part of the nature of a Malek is that they disguise themselves so that when we daven to be saved, we're really davening for the wrong thing. And the response to that is a stam prayer, a general, hand over this nation, whoever they may be, to me, so that I don't be defeated, but without specifying exactly who it is. Yeah?
It's a little bit confusing to me that they would choose to keep their uniforms at a distance. You know, physically, you would see the Malek army, as you said, uniforms, you would be, you know, you would maybe hear their voices, or they'd be taunting us from a distance, shouting, but it'd be like their trick is, it'd be seeming more wise for them. They really want us to daven for something. Dress as Kanani.
Yes.
To speak their language. And it reminds me something of Esav and Yaakov, the changing the voice or the clothing.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. And again, in terms of what the sages are saying here, is getting at that point of confusion. I don't know, you know, I can tell you an answer of, no, it's too expensive to come up with a different uniform. Changing the language was easy, changing the uniform was hard.
That's a really good answer.
But I don't know that that's, you know, the depth of the answer. But the main point of what the sages are getting at is the level of confusion that in, not only did a Malek attack, but attacked in a way specifically to confuse, and to confuse what? To confuse the tefillah of the Jewish people. The depth of what the sages are saying here is very, you know, something you get confused by the story. Like, what kind of funny trickery is that? If I want to confuse, I was just looking yesterday again into this whole, what's it called, the Stuxnet virus that whoever it was sent to the nuclear reactor in Iran. So, if you're fighting against technology, what do you try to disable? You try to disable their technology. If you disable whatever the capability is of your enemy. A Malek doesn't come against the silos of the Jewish people. He doesn't try to confuse or attack our weaponry. He doesn't try to attack our control. What do they come after? Our ability to use our mouths. It's the sages are pointing out the depths of the Jewish people and the way that we fight our wars. We don't fight our wars with cavalry and with weapons and with strategy. We fight our wars with our mouth. And so when a Malek attacks, they aim to send a virus, so to speak, our main weapon. And how do the Jewish people respond? They say, okay, so we won't be specific. We'll say a vanilla flavor. But that's our power. That's our power, and that's what they were aware of. Exactly as you said, in the sense of Esav dressing up, in the same way as that kol Yaakov, the voice is the voice of Yaakov, the strength of Yaakov will always be in his voice. V'hayadayim yidei Esav, and the hands are Esav. So they dress themselves up. Mamash, the exact reversal of Yaakov dressing himself up to fool his father. They dress themselves up to fool us and get us with our mouth to, so to speak, be off center with our weaponry. But it's just a fascinating insight into the power of how the sages understood what our main weapon is. Okay, Derech HaYisarim. Where were the Jewish people traveling that this nation, be it a Malek, be it a Kanani nation, heard when they attacked? The Derech HaYisarim. No, it's a funny phrase, which Rashi is the one who came up with a translation that Art School goes with, which is Derech HaNegev, the southern path. Shaholchu bol miraglim, that the miraglim went upon. Says the Ramban, Kikasher bo hamiraglim, when the miraglim came to the land of, and again, the miraglim is going from the approach of the people, the nation who attacked us was a nation that lived in the land of Israel. When the miraglim, when the spies came into the land of Israel, the olu banegev, the Torah tells us which route they went up into the land. They were coming from the south, they were coming from Egypt out through the desert, they went up through the south into the land of Israel. V'chazru lahem. And they returned that same route down, says the Ramban, through the south. Hirgishu bahem yoshvei haaretz. The nations of the land picked up on the fact that they had been there. Now we know the famous Chazal that while they were there, they were distracted by the funerals which were taking place all around them. But as they then made their way back down, says the Ramban, there were some of the dwellers of the land who were able to pick up on the fact that look at this caravan of people carrying these huge fruits on these beams, on these poles as they walked out. They were aware of this. And those nations all the way in the south noted these people coming in and coming back down. They followed them until they arrived at the Jewish camp. So that this nation, says the Ramban, basing himself on the Targum Unkelus, on the translation of Unkelus, this nation that attacked, who is Yoshev Banegev, who dwelled in the south, why he dwelled by the south, and why does the Torah tell us that they heard that the Jews were on the route of the spies? Says the Ramban, he puts them together, that the spies which had gone up through the south and come back down through the south, the nation of the south, they picked up on these people coming in and coming out, followed after them to see what's doing, and they saw, we got this nation here on the verge of attack, on the verge of this conquest of the entire land. I want to share with you a thought that I saw from Nechama Leibowitz, a well-known mechanechet, a teacher of Chumash and other things, who has published many, many books on Chumash. She connects this Ramban. This Ramban who says that the Derech HaOisanim, that the Torah points out that the route that the spies had taken was the route that this nation picked up, that they had come back on, together with the missing component of why are they attacking. So the sages had already pointed out one reason was because of the death of Aharon. So Nechama Leibowitz points out that the Torah is also stressing the root of the spies. And the spies was a significant episode in the Jewish history, as we all know. This whole incident is taking place 38 years later after the spies. Why is the Torah going back and telling us that they're attacking now on the root of the spies? It's a long time after the spies. They've been wandering 38, 39 years as a result of the spies. She points out that what the Ramban is saying here is that the spies were a lack of faith in Hashem. The fact that they wanted to send the spies in the first place, Hashem said, it's a good land, I'm going to give it to you, I'm going to conquer it for you, and they still insisted on sending their own spies. The way that the nations of the world react and respond to the Jewish people, they respond to us directly, inversely proportionally to the way that we respond to Hashem. When we respond with faith, when we respond with trust, when we respond with confidence, the scale is tipped and they're quiet. But the second we fall off of our pedestal, when we don't respond with that faith, we don't respond with that trust and that confidence, the more we come back down, it's as a direct response, it opens the door and the confidence of the nations of the world that we can be taken. Because we are not a normal people. We have never been a normal people. We have not survived because of natural means. We only have survived, as we've said many, many, many times, because of the truth and the reality, and that's how this theme just runs through so much of Jewish history. When we connect ourselves to eternity, everything else falls into place. The moment we disconnect, and directly proportional to how much we disconnect, then we become just the nation amongst all the others, and a pretty vulnerable one at that. And so that the Ramban is pointing out, this nation which is attacking was attacking on the root of the spies. Why does the Torah stress that the attack came on the root of the spies? Because it was because in an account of the root of the spies that they attacked. Because we pulled back the whole concept of the spies, that we pulled back from that confidence and trust and faith, is what gives such nations of the world the ability to say, so we'll attack them, we can take them, this is just a nation of Jews, but it's a big deal. And that the connection that the Torah puts between these two is exactly that point of stressing that connection. Vayesh mimenu shevi. They took a captive. Rashi points out, as you did, eina ela shivcha achas. It was a single maidservant. How did the sages know that? Where did the sages get single maidservants? So the sages point out, because the nation that was being led by Moshe Rabbeinu, attacked by the nation that is in Eretz Yisrael, on the land which they're about to conquer, it was inconceivable that the singular captive that they had lost would have been from the nation itself. It was one of the captives that they themselves had taken during a previous skirmish with the nations of the world, and that person was taken captive. And even in that situation, the Jews didn't say, all right, forget it, let's go on. They make the vow to Hashem and say, we are being attacked, we've lost one of ours. If you will hand this nation over to us, then we will consecrate the cities of the nation that is attacking us. When we eventually get back there and take over that land, we will consecrate that city to you. And that's how we learned V'vayishma Hashem es b'kol Yisrael, and Hashem heard the voice of Yisrael. And the Ramban writes, and why is this here, this entire episode, for this concept that what's being introduced, he says, that the Kanani were given over into the hands of who was given over to the Jews people, mehem ato, who was given over to the Jews then and now, ki Hashem shama est filosam, because Hashem will hear their, has heard and will hear their prayers, vehem kimu es nidram, and the Jewish people have kept their neder, that even this neder is being fed now to a people which are in the desert, that they will keep that which it is when they eventually make it back into the land of Israel. So that we have this little episode, these three verses here describing following the death of Aaron. So the sages again, so this is again, I just want to separate the threads of the sages and the threads of the Ramban in terms of the Pshat. Following the death of Aharon, the Torah describes in three verses this battle of the king of Arad and the Kanani. So according to the Ramban, who lived in Canaan, left his city to attack because he heard, or he saw, perceived from the way of the spies that the Jewish people had weakened in their connection to Hashem, and therefore that was an opportune time for him to come and attack. Takes a single captive, a maidservant who the Jews themselves had captured in a previous battle. The Jews respond with their voice, with a promise of consecration of the cities. Hashem listens to their cry, they are victorious, and then the Torah testifies that years later the Jews would actually fulfill that promise, that neder and vow, and consecrate the city. Rashi quotes from the way of the sages that the nation which attacked is actually Amalek, which dwelled in the south, and the reason why they're called Canaanites are not because they actually lived in Canaan, but because they disguised themselves as Canaanim to attack, and they were trying to disguise and disrupt the most powerful weaponry that the Jewish people have, which is their mouth, trying to confuse them that they should pray for something specific which was not really true. The Jewish people respond with a general vow of, if you give this nation over to us, we will consecrate their cities, which they eventually do when they take them, which will not necessarily be like the Ramban all the way back in the land of Israel, but wherever those cities were, where the Amaleki had attacked from, when they would capture those cities, they would consecrate the booty from therein to Hashem, which fits with the fact that all Amaleki stuff we don't really take and keep for ourselves, but it's consecrated as a cherem, as dedicated specifically to Hashem. Alright, those are just the thoughts we'll end a little few minutes early this morning, but those are just these three verses as they're sort of placed here in the Torah, where they fit, according to Rashi again, based on the death of Aaron, according to the Ramban, based on this episode of the spies. Alright, so next week is Bina, and we'll take a break for the summer. I'll make sure that Gil has it in the flyer. Wish you all a great summer.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.